Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I'm your host, Troy McDonald. If you are on the ground in the movement for Black equality and really for the equality of all in Kenosha, you know my guest today. He was recently named the 2021 recipient of the Mahone Foundation's Living Legend Community Award. He is the CEO and founder of Regimen Barber Collective, and this Saturday is the lead organizer of Kenosha's Juneteenth celebration, taking place today at 13th Court and Lawn off of 52nd Street. Please welcome Alvin Owens to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So we'll get to the huge celebration, the happening that's going on today. But first, I want to talk about how you got started with Regimen Barber Collective, which you are the CEO and founder of, and how that has transformed into more than a barbershop.
So, it all starts with a vision. And I'm a barber by trade, a professional educator. So I knew that I was going to open up a barbershop in Kenosha. I just didn't know when. I didn't know it was going to be in 2020. I actually was looking around in Chicago for opening up a barbershop. And I knew that I wanted to open up something different. Even in Chicago, I was looking to create jobs with the barbershop that I was going to open. And I knew that it had to have an educational component because I do the annual spring break college tour that started in Kenosha and that just grew to southeast Wisconsin and northeast Illinois. So I knew that it whatever barbershop that I was going to open, it had to have those elements in it, resources, job creation, and education. And that's really how the name came about. Regimen means to repeat or to honor a tradition, something as simple as brushing your teeth every day, to making sure that you're taking care of yourself and repeating those steps, whatever those steps are in order to take care of yourself. And then barbering is the world that I'm in. And then the collective is a combination of all things, of, like I said, the job creation and other things. So I definitely wanted to make sure that that the name reflected what I was doing. So Regimen Barber Collective, there you have it.
Awesome. Talk about the college tour that you have. And that is so important, especially for Black men to have that experience. So why was that particularly important for you?
I remember it's funny because I was at Columbia College, not at a HBCU. And at Columbia, you have to do internships. And that was way in the 80s. And so I ended up going on Young Life's annual college tour to do my internship, volunteering with their program. So I was like a junior chaperone. I was young. I was in college. And I was hurt. Like I was devastated that I didn't go visit colleges and universities, historically Black colleges and universities, when I was a minor. Like I was just so upset. I mean, I love the experience, but I wish I would have seen these colleges and universities before I had chose my school. I love Columbia College. I wouldn't change it for the world. However, it did something to me. I noticed that there was a difference. So when Columbia College and also city colleges in most of America's big cities are predominantly Black. However, when you visit a HBCU, it isn't just predominantly Black. It's you're the majority. And that's a difference. When you're the majority, that means that you are in control. And so when I take students to places like, let me finish the story. From then on, I was doing college tours after that until I developed my own. But from understanding what does a predominantly attended Black college versus a historically Black college and university, the worlds are two different worlds apart. The worlds are so different. And what I noticed was when you take students to a place like Mississippi or even Georgia, and you go to Morehouse and Spelman and Clark and Jackson State, they're not only seeing themselves, they're seeing themselves empowered. And they're seeing themselves as the president, as the chaplain. Anywhere you look left and right, you take them to Atlanta and they see a Black police chief on a horse. That's not something you see every day in inner cities. And so that was the difference. It, you know, when I took the first group of students out of Wisconsin to go to, I remember we were in Memphis at the Lorraine Motel where Dr. King was shot. And his voice was bellowing throughout microphones throughout the museum. And it just hit the students different because the whole city, if you will, was Black. And so the experience was not only we're seeing something in the past, but how it was affecting them and shaping them in present day. So it's something that you read in the book, but once you see the history actually lift off the books and you're around it and you're touching it and you're feeling it, it has a different feeling. So taking students, no matter what color the student is, to historically Black colleges and universities to see these schools, it's really America's secret, beautiful secret. These schools are outstanding and they're lied upon. There's myths about historically Black colleges and universities. People say, oh, they're at a lesser quality. A lot of people don't realize a lot of them are D1. In athletic codes. They are phenomenal schools. They will shatter any school they can go. They could ride up against the best of them. Spelman College alone is the number one school for women, no matter what color the female is. Spelman College is ranked the number one school for women in America, period. And you have places like Hampton and Howard, and these Black Ivy League schools could stand up against the Yales and the Harvards because of their programmings that they've worked so hard for. So, I mean, the stigmas has been shattered, and that's what we do. We shatter stigmas when we take students to see historically Black colleges and universities.
That is absolutely incredible. I recently had Dr. Greg Carr, who is a professor at Howard University, on the program, and the pride that he has in not only that institution, but in his students is just unbelievable. There is an attentiveness that I don't think you get. Again, I can't speak for all universities, but there's a care and a level of attention to detail that those professors pay because they're putting that soil, they're feeding that soil into their own community, right?
Yes.
And there's a deeper connection there. How many kids get this amazing opportunity? I mean, I'm sure that's competitive.
I just announced it. And I want to say that to piggyback off what you were saying, literally more African-American students have graduated from HBCUs with their bachelors and gone on to get their continued education with their master's and doctorate than any institution in America. And that's literally over 75%. So, you know, those are the real numbers. So that goes to show you, it isn't saying that we can't go and be successful at other schools, but the proof is in the pudding. The majority of African-Americans who graduate from college graduates from an HBCU. So that's just facts. The other question you were asking me, what was it again?
How many kids are you able to take every year?
So we take about, last one before COVID, 2 weeks, 200 students.
Wow. Oh my gosh. So could you talk about that process of how, because I would think that that's its own selective process. Because this is a coveted thing to be a part of.
Yeah, it's funny. When we started, it was not academic based. It was, you know, I was working for Bullen Middle School, and all you heard in 98 was you heard the academic achievement gap. You know, the Blacks are on the bottom, whites are at the top. And recently they said it closed a little bit, but it wasn't because African-Americans did better. it was because white students didn't do as good as they had done before. So it closed because other groups didn't push out larger numbers. So that isn't a reward. You know, there's still an academic achievement gap. And guess what? It doesn't mean that African-American students are less educated. So we want to educate the people on that as well. We have students that come out of the hood, if you will, out of the inner cities of America, and they are doing it, 4.0 bright stars. But what we're saying is the systems and the accessibility to resources and education doesn't always trickle down to inner cities. And that's what we're talking about, academic achievement gaps. And that's what happens when you have so many that are not doing good. We'll pull down even the ones who are doing good. And then all of that number, no matter if you have a pocket of students doing great, it pulls everybody in that category back down. So how many students we have going annually? It's funny, like I said, we started with just going for cultural reasons. Let's just get African-American students, introduce HBCUs, mix it up with predominantly populated Caucasian schools. We mixed it up. We didn't just take them to HBCUs. We mixed it up. We wanted them to see both. And so with that first tour, was supposed to be 14 students in a van, turned out to 45 to now 200, where we're doing four buses at a time within 2 weeks. The process is that it used to be just Kenosha would have a bus, then Racine would have a bus. Then it'll be sprinkled with some Zion kids and Chicago kids, but they have different spring breaks. So now you have Chicago suburb kids with Wisconsin students, and you have Wisconsin suburb kids with Chicago students. So wherever their break falls, we try to accommodate that within those 2 weeks. And that's how we, and a lot of times the students will see each other. We used to all travel together at once on one spring break date. Now we've split it. So as one bus is ending in one city, another bus is starting, another two buses are starting up. And we sometimes see each other on the road. It's very beautiful when we get to do that, when it lines up. The students love it because as the Chicago students are ending their spring break, the Wisconsin students are already on their way to Atlanta to celebrate. So it really works out. And we have a lot of fun that way.
Wow, that is just incredible. And the organizing behind that. I mean, do you get any sleep?
So, you know, we always want to encourage, and every chaperone is, you know, we do background checks and things like that. So if people are interested in volunteering, we usually have people who are already within the school district, Boys and Girls Club, YMCA, because they're vetted through that background system. But if not, if somebody's just a parent who wants to go, you just fill out the application and we, you know, we do the processing because we want the parents to know that all of our chaperones are vetted. And then also we want to make sure that there's a safety protocol. So we go through training as well. And no, you're right. We do not get sleep. So we need people who not only want to go for the historical benefits of it, or maybe they want to go with their child because their child have these great grades and they want to see a particular school. We welcome that. But we all work together to make sure that we're actually taking care of the students while we're on the trip.
Wow, that's great. Talk about the fundraising for that, getting the buses and all of that. How important has community support been to get that off the ground?
You know, you mentioned that I just received the Living Legend Legacy Award, Living Legend Award by the Mahone Foundation, and they are 100% troopers and support our program. And, you know, but I would still say education youth compared to the Mahones, and that's our, you know, like our family. You know, I would consider them mainstream, and that's something that we still, after 23 years, try to be is mainstream. We're mainstream in certain aspects, but as far as fundraising efforts, we're still Sister Jenkins spaghetti dinner fish fry. that has helped get students on the tour, and not only that, to college. So, and I appreciate Sister Jenkins and those type of efforts. And to everybody out there in Radio Land, Sister Jenkins is a metaphor of auntie or grandma in the community who helped get kids out. So we're still at that level, even though we've accepted mainstream funds from different organizations. We would love for more volunteers. I think the dynamic with us is because it's a one-year tour. We're active during the school season, and we try to get some type of little break during the summer. But the need is so big that parents even want us to do summer tours. So within the last couple of years, we've really been operating as a yearly program, and just trying to get more volunteers to commit to the cause, so we can push more groundbreaking fundraisers.
Alvin, I'm going to pause right here. We're about 15 minutes in. Do you mind going? I mean, I want to give you the whole slot, the whole 30-minute slot.
Yeah.
I mean, you're okay.
Sure.
Okay. Just want to let you know before I just continue talking, because I told you 15. Okay. Good. 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 All right. So we'll edit that out. So, if all of that was not enough, you've taken it on your shoulders to launch and to manage the Juneteenth events for Kenosha this year. Are you kidding me? Uh-huh. Talk about how
I am, and go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about that. Just talk about how you decided to do that and add that on your already full plate.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out to a lot of the guys. You know, you hear unfortunately, sometimes you hear in a lot of our inner cities that Black men, you know, where are they and what are they doing? And I could tell you, I'm not by myself with this Juneteenth festival. Yeah, I'm like the lead coordinator, the go-to person. I have the facility, the shop where it's like the hub for us to meet and gather. But it really happened organically while I'm cutting hair. And a few of us guys was talking about it, and we said, let's do it. And I have to mention the Tim Mahones, the Anthony Kennedy, the Anthony Jefferson, the Brandon Morris, the Kendall West, the Art West. It's so many guys out there, Joe Langston, and their wives and other family. And I don't want to leave the women out because they have our back. But it really just started us sitting in the barbershop. We were talking about my brother Arlen Owens, we were talking about, and David Arrington, and Mustafa, we were talking about the men's health and wealth, and that I host here every other month. And so we said, instead of doing the next men's health and wealth, we'll do the Juneteenth celebration out on the lawn next to the shop. And we were just talking about a block party that has now turned into a citywide event. And I can tell you, it really happened organically. Maybe that's why it's going well. It really happened organically, and we didn't have a million meetings to decide on who's bringing the red tablecloth. It literally happened because we just wanted something for our community. And I definitely want to salute the African-American men in the barbershop. That's ironic because, you know, it always goes down in the barbershop, and I have a barbershop that wants to promote positivity and change in our community. And with that type of vibe, results like Juneteenth is going to happen. One of the major, major highlights is the new Black Wall Street. And that's going on from noon till about 5 o'clock. And that's something that we based the Juneteenth off of the five pillars: family, education, health, social justice, and finance, wealth. And so we knew that we wanted to have a mission and a purpose and a vision with this year's Juneteenth, unlike any other before. And we're saluting all that happened in the past, but we wanted to do something where we gathered at least a goal of 40 African-American businesses. We're now at 60 African-American businesses that will be at this year's Juneteenth. And that's where we're calling it the Black Wall Street Market. So we wanted to make sure that we're supporting, we want people to come out and patronize the Black Wall Street Market. It's different. So you want to purchase things from purses to novelty to products, grooming products, men and women, something for everybody, for kids, buy food, different types of foods from these vendors. It's just, we want to protect our vendors and give our African-American businesses, entrepreneurs and startups an opportunity to shine. And unfortunately, at a lot of other citywide events, there's only one or two minority businesses that are presenting themselves in a good light. And so we want to make sure that we honor those who represent at those festivals. Like, you have the Taste of Kenosha, you have a few African-American vendors, and salute them. But we want to make sure that we want to let everybody know that we have a lot of African-American businesses that are some great businesses, some hardworking people who would like their businesses to shine and be a part of mainstream Kenosha. And so we're putting them on Front Street, actually on 13th off of 52nd.
Wow, that is such a huge concept too, to have the goal of 40 and now 60 businesses ranging from all these different things. Something that I also think is really cool is that you have a teen takeover from 2 until 4.
Yes.
Why was it important to give young people, Gen Z, their own 2 hours?
When we were deciding on how do we make it fun for everybody, usually you go to a festival, you're going to see the bouncy houses, that knocks out all the kids. Give them some ice cream all day and a bouncy house and they're good. But the teenagers are usually like, oh, I had to bring my other younger brother or sister. And so they usually don't like staying. And so we're trying to bring peace and unity in our community. There's been negative press within our community about violence in certain areas. And so we want to make sure that our teens are with us. We want to love on our young people of all ages. And we want to give them the stage and their mic and their voice. We want to hear their voices. We want to hear them, their spoken word, their poetry, their music. Yes, I know I'm saying it, their music, edited.
So we're not going to get any Frankie Beverly or Maze or Sade.
We'll get that during the variety show, but during their time we'll be listening to some little Yachty or some, I don't know. But I told them it has to be edited. And so, you know, the TikTok, because that's them, you know, teenagers, they will sit at home while everybody's gone and be on TikTok and be okay. So we're bringing home to them. We're saying, get your TikTok challenge, you can win some money. We're bringing back the Mr. and Miss Juneteenth. So it's a lot going on. And we really want all ages to show up. Grandmama is going to be out there. We want teenagers, we want babies out there. And we're going to do something incredible. We're going to do the Great African-American Family Photo. So that's what we're going to say. Everybody, stop what you're doing. We're going to get some of our photographers on a ladder, and we're just going to look up into one same direction and take a big group picture. Yeah,
and that gave me chills. Wow, that gave me chills too. Wow, especially because, I mean, as you know, in our community, right, there's that thing that we don't work together, right? And so this is our one chance, like, from all different families, right? But to realize that we are part of this one community here. I mean, that symbolism right there means so much. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. I don't think that this would be an event that you would organize without the educational component. And so that's core to who you are. So you have a town hall that's going on. Talk about kind of what you want to talk about during that as well.
And, you know, we're leaving it up to the public. We do have, you know, some people who will moderate and guide the conversation to be about what we want to see. What is the famous saying? Be the change you want to see. And so after a whole year of the civil unrest, after a lot of marching, after a lot of rallying, it's important that we have conversations. And let me honor the rallying. Let me honor the marching. Let me honor, you know, the social, the chance for social justice. But at the same time, we also want to include the sit down and just talk. And yes, will it be passionate? It may be. But we still want to make sure that Kenosha is heard and that people have an opportunity to say exactly how they feel. We've actually invited the Democratic Party and the Republican Party to come out and listen. You know, so we want to make sure that that they come out. You know, we've invited elected officials at 12 o'clock p.m. sharp, right at the beginning of the town hall. We had the mayor who requested a proclamation for Juneteenth Kenosha, and we got it. So we'll be reading that and opening up the town hall, which is very befitting, with a welcome, introduction of what Juneteenth means, a proclamation, and then town hall. And it's very important that we share how we feel. And we don't all agree, but just as long as we agree and we move forward, and that is the point of the town hall, is that that we, even if you disagree, you agree to disagree, but you move forward. And I think a lot of times we stop, we just disagree, and then that's it, and we go about our separate ways. It's okay to come together as a community and have different views and perspectives, but still be a collective, one collective voice with moving our community forward.
And my next question ties in perfectly to that. I just think that that's awesome, right? To give people the opportunity to, and the elected officials, to hear from us, right? Mm-hmm. In one cohesive way, I think is important. But tying to that, you have on the flyer that's going around all on social media, that this is a special tribute to Wilson Heights, to Lincoln, and to Brass, Uptown. Yeah. Why was it important to include those neighborhoods there for you?
You know, everybody's emotionally tied to Lincoln Park, especially when it has to deal with Juneteenth. And I just felt like, let's get a breath of fresh air. We went through COVID. We went through a very challenging election year. We went through civil unrest when Kenosha Uptown was ripped up. And so we just want to tell everybody, leave the neighborhood for a second, just a second. Come over and let us lift you up. Let us, you know, love on you. Let us honor you. Let us shout out the names that of the ones who put in the work, like the Thelma Orrs in Uptown and Lincoln, and Reverend Arrington over in Wilson Heights. And I'm 52, and I remember growing up, there was only a few things that we've done over in Wilson Heights. We never had Juneteenth over in Wilson Heights, and we always forget about Washington Park. That's another pocket of where African Americans and minorities live, but nobody ever does anything over there. So I felt it was very important to Wilson Heights, Lincoln, Brass, and Uptown neighborhoods to just get a breath of fresh air, to just come here a little bit close to downtown over by Station Side and just breathe. Just enjoy being around each other, leaving your neighborhood for a second and just enjoying each other. And I wanted a spot over by the barbershop across the street from the Boys and Girls Club where we could just all come together, have the whole block party to ourselves and just enjoy, but make it open to the public. We have neighbors and friends and family that we want to invite out. And I just felt it was important to recognize them. Wilson, if you notice, Wilson Heights never gets attention. And yet that was a huge African-American community at one time over there with the apartment complexes over there. And it was never, you know, you never hear about a lot of the leaders over there, the Uncle Leroy's or the aunties, you know, the Sister Jenkins. But you had an incredible woman like Yolanda Jackson Lewis, who was the principal over there for so many years, I think 17 plus years, who really revamped, you know, all these babies who are now grown men and women who was raised under her tutelage. I mean, it's just incredible. And so you just never hear about that. And so that's what we're doing. We're honoring our past, celebrating our today, and we're pushing for our future. So that's what that was about.
Wow, absolutely fantastic to have Alvin Owens, the CEO and founder of Regimen Barber Collective and the lead organizer of Kenosha